Daf Dalet Amud Aleph. We'll see if we can, if not complete the sugya of Masker and Socher, at least make some serious progress. After trying to compare the issue of Masker and Socher Bedikas Chometz to the issue of Masker and Socher in Mezuzah, the Gemara quotes Rav Mesharshia to the effect that there's no comparison to Mezuzah because Mezuzah clearly is a Chovas Hador. What does that mean, a Chovas Hador? Who's going to be obligated to put up the Mezuzah, the Maskir or the Socher? Socher. Why? Because the Socher is the Dar. Dar means he's living in the house. So Rashi says the following. Dibra Maskel Lasos Lo Mezuzah, the third of the wide lines. Alma in the Havami, the Gemara thought, Midi de Mitzvah Alei Rami. We explained this yesterday. Let's just review that if both the Maskir and the Socher, each individually, have reason to be obligated in this mitzvah, and in a sense, both the Maskir, insofar as he owns the house, the Socher, insofar as he lives in the house, or in the case of Bedikas Chometz, the Maskir, insofar as he owns the Chometz, and the Socher, insofar as the Chometz is now in his Rishus, he's living with the Chometz, both the Maskir and the Socher have ample reason to be Chayav. So what do we do? Are there, or I should say, is there any overriding rule in halacha as to who should actually implement the mitzvah, the maskir or the socher, when both are obligated? And the Gemara thought that from mezuzah we can derive a conclusion for bedikas chametz, that just like in mezuzah both the maskir should be chayav and the socher should be chayav in putting up the mezuzah, so too in Bedikas Chometz, as far as who's chayav in the Bedikah, both the Maskir and the Socher. Alma, from the fact that we quoted a Braisa, the Braisa says that the Socher is the one who's obligated to put up the Mezuzah, is meaning the Mitzvah Alei Ramyeh, that if there's a Mitzvah and you have to determine who should be obligated to implement that Mitzvah, whether it's between, and if it's between the Maskir and the Socher, then the Socher is the one who is obligated to implement that Mitzvah. But Gemara says no. In the case of Maskir and Socher, with regard to Mezuzah, there's one who's Chayev, only one who's Chayev. And in this case, the Maskir is not Chayev, he's not living in the house. The Socher is Chayev insofar as he's living in the house. And the nature and the essence of the mitzvah of Mezuzah, the obligation of Mezuzah is a Chovas Hador. Dar means the one who's living there. In this case, the Socher. Why is that so? Says Rashi, Lefisha hi misham raso. The mezuzah is going to protect him. Him meaning the Socher is living in the house. Uksiv, and the Torah says, Beisecha. Right? Uksavtem al mezuzah beisecha visharecha. And the Chazal, the Gemara Menachos on Daf Lamed Daled, derives that the word beisecha means biasecha, which means nichnas v'yotze ba. So beisecha means you go in and you go out. The Gemara makes this kind of equation between two words in Lashon Kodesh that are somewhat similar, and that is beischa and biasecha. Obviously they're two different words because biasecha adds an aleph in the middle.
What does that word actually mean?
Biasecha means going in. Right?
You're going in.
Sorry.
This is so.
Place the mezuzah on the house that you go into. So who goes into the house?
So
that's a special overriding reason that applies in mezuzah, and that's going to tip the scale in favor of the Socher having the obligation to put up the mezuzah. But there's no such consideration, no such parallel reasoning with regard to Bedikas Chometz. which means that Bedikas Chometz remains an outstanding question, a suffix. So Rashi explains. Rashi says, "I will hocha bedikas chametz derabbanan." Maybe if it were a doraisa, Rashi saying, maybe we could use the paradigm of mezuzah and say that just like mezuzah is a chovas hasocher, insofar as he's the dar, then maybe anyone who lives in the house and there are mitzvahs that are incumbent upon the house, the socher should take it upon himself to implement that mitzvah. But we're not dealing with the doraisa here. So, you know, we can't make any, you know, when you're dealing with doraisas, you can set up principles that are absolute and that you can make equations and analogies and darshan the Torah. But here we're talking about a derabbanan. Now, Rashi has to justify why bedikas chametz is only derabbanan. You and I would have said, for sure it's only derabbanan. Rashi's not so sure about it. He's got to work overtime to prove that. De'imishum bal yiroya u'bal yimotzei. If you underline those four words, I don't have to write it on the blackboard. Bal yiroya u'bal yimotzei. Actually, I did write it on the back. Okay. But you could have actually copied it from Rashi. It means lo yiroya v'lo yimotzei. So that itself would obligate you in bedika. Why? You own the chametz. It's in your house. You don't know exactly where it is. You got to find it, because if you don't find it,
you don't own the chametz. The master owns the chametz.
No, we're talking about a regular case of bedikas chametz. You know, Rashi wants to show you that bedikas chametz is only derabbanan. The whole institution, the whole enterprise of bedikas chametz is only derabbanan. You might argue, that's what Rashi is presenting the counter argument, that since you own chametz, the Torah says ba'yirah ba'yimotzei, you better find that chametz, because if you don't find that chametz, you'll be in violation of ba'yirah ba'yimotzei. But we know that there's another solution to the problem of ba'yirah ba'yimotzei. You don't have to check for chametz. Bittul, exactly. And that's what Rashi points out here, that hamrina l'kaman, the Gemara is going to say later on in Davav, that sagile, it's, as far as the Torah is concerned, it's sufficient bittul bi'alma. And now Rashi is going to define what bittul is, but be that as it may, the Rabbanon did not rely on bittul. And the Gemara is going to go through a whole analysis on Daf Vav Amud Beis, exactly why the Chacham were not satisfied, where the Torah was satisfied with bittul. So I'm just going to fast forward here. This Rashi that I'm skipping is going to be major work for us, exactly what bittul is, but we're not up to the sugya of bittul yet. He says, Vahashta now, ki hai gavna mi boilan, now in this case where there was a maskir in the socher, torech ze al mi mutal, meaning they're both equally obligated, or there's ample reason, as we said before, to obligate both the maskir and the socher, but who has to do the torech? The torech means who has to actually implement the mitzvah. Can the maskir force the socher and say, look, I know you rented this and it's going to be a hassle for me, you have to implement this mitzvah? Or can the socher turn to the maskir and say, look, I don't have this obligation, you have this obligation? Now the Gemara comes to the final conclusion, but we'll get back to the suffix itself in just a minute. And the Gemara says, Omar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman responded to his questioner, Tanino, we have a brisa, and the brisa addresses your question. Hamaskir b'ayis l'chavero, im ad shalom mosa lo maftechos chal arbosar, al hamaskir livdok, im mishem mosa lo maftechos chal arbosar, al asocher livdok. The brisa says it all depends upon what's called mesiras maftechos. So if you're writing in your ledger, you have to copy the words mosar lo maftechos, which you'll see in the Gemara. I'm not going to write it on the board because it's right in the Gemara. You can copy it from the Gemara. And mosar lo maftechos means he handed over the keys. And now what we're saying is that as far as bedikas chametz is concerned, everything depends upon mesiras maftechos. And there are two possibilities. And depending on these two possibilities, we're going to determine who has to do the bedika, the maskir or the socher. The first possibility is that the mesiras maftechos, the handing over the keys, took place took place after the beginning of Yudalit. That's called Ad Shalom Masa Mavtechos Chal Arbasa. Chal Arbasa means the emergence or the beginning of Arbasa. Let's call it Seis HaKochavim going into Arbasa. That took place Ad Shalom Masa Mavtechos, before the Mavtechos were handed over. So it means that, let's say, in our example that we gave, what time did we say was Seis HaKochavim?
Seven.
Who's in possession of the Maftechos now between 7 and 8? The Maskir. Oh, so that's called Ad Shalom Masalom Maftechos Chalar. But even before the Maftechos were handed over to the Socher, Arbasar was Chal. Chal means it began, it entered. So the entryway, you know, the beginning of our boss, or it's called Chal Ar Boss, so that's 7 o'clock in our example. That's Tseis HaKochavim. That came before the Mesiris Maftech. So who is in possession of the Maftechos at 7 p.m.? The Maskir. Ala Maskir Livdok. If past 7 p.m., the Maskir is holding on to the Maftechos, he hasn't yet handed the keys over to the renter, then he, the owner of the house, the Maskir, has to do the Bedika. But he, in the following case, Mishem Masalo Maftechos, after the Maftechos were already given over to the Socher, Chal Arbasar, it became Tseis HaKochavim of the 14th, is Ala Socher Livdok. In such a case, the Socher has to make the Bedika because he already was in possession of the Maftechos before the 14th. So basically, we now have to go back to our original question and see, you know, the Gemara had two tzadim and had two sides of the equation, and that was the boiler, that was the suffix that was presented to Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak. What is the final conclusion regarding that suffix? It was before we wanted to know who's chayiv in the bedikah, is the person who owns the chametz or the person who's living with the chametz? And now the Gemara comes to an interesting conclusion that it all depends who's holding on to the keys at the beginning of the 14th when Yudalit emerges, that's called Chal Arbasa, or who's holding on to the Maftechas. If the Maskir is still holding on to the Maftechas, then he, the Maskir, has to do the Bedika. If he's already passed on the Maftechas to the Socher, then the Socher has to do the Bedika. Now let's see if we can analyze this question according to both Rashi and Tosfos. Let's just review. Rashi understood that the issue here was a basic issue about who should really be obligated in Bedikas Chametz. Is the one who owns the Chametz or the one who lives with the Chametz, if you can use that. If it's Birshuso. And the answer seems to be that it really depends upon the Shas Chovoso, meaning that critical moment of Chalos Arbasar will determine who has to do the Bedika insofar as who has access to the house. You can only obligate someone in Bedika if he has access to the house. If it's a locked house and he has no way of opening the door with the keys, then he cannot be obligated in Bedika. So it basically means the following. Once the Maskir is holding on to the keys at the time of the Chalos Arbasa, then he, the Maskir, has to do the Bedika. He's the only one who has access to the Chametz, to the house. And since it's his Chametz, that's ample reason to be Machayev him in Bedika. He has to do the Bedika. An hour from now, he passes on the keys at 8 p.m. over to the Socher. He cannot shake himself of the chiyuv bedika. He's already become obligated in the bedika. If, on the other hand, the Maskir gave the keys over to the Socher before 7 o'clock, and the Socher himself now has access to the house, then the Socher, insofar as he's living with the Chametz, he's going to be obligated in the bedika. So basically, the Gemara skirts the original question. We're really not going to come to any final conclusion about which of these two elements is more powerful and trumps the other one in terms of who's obligated bedika. Is it the ownership over the chametz, or is it the living with the chametz? The truth is, I don't know the answer to that question. What I do know is that I can clarify and determine who has access to the house at 7 p.m. at Seisa Kokovim at the Chalos Arbos, and that's the person who's obligated in the Bedika. You might argue that according to this approach, as we said over and over again, both the Maskir and the Socher, each individually, respectively, have reason to be obligated. But the question is, what happened at that critical moment of Chalos Arbos? Who has access to the keys, and therefore who could be obligated to implement the Bedika? One last point here, that according to this approach, it would seem that once at that critical moment you became chayev, let's say in the first case where the maskir became chayev, and the reason for this is because at chalos yudalit, he, the maskir, is holding on to the keys, he can't shirk that responsibility, shed the responsibility, and pass it on to the socher by giving over the maftechas to the socher. So the socher could say to him, look, Mr. Maskir, you were obligated at the moment of the inception of the Chiyuv Bedika, that's called Chalos Arbosar, therefore you remain obligated. All that is according to Rashi. But now we get to Tosfos. And if you recall that Tosfos, Dibur Maskil Al Maskir Livdok, he had a different interpretation of the sugi. He quotes the Ri, and the Ri says that the tzad to be machai of the maskir is because, and I quote, this is line 7 or 8 in Tosfos Dibur Maskil Al, the first word line is v'chal, and he says, v'chal of chiv bedika shah achas kodem shizkira. That means the Re understands that the schirus, the rental agreement, became binding at 8 p.m. And the question is whether or not the maskir could transfer his chiyuv bedika over to the socher. Is bedikas chametz transferable? Do you remember that? Oh. Now, in the context of Tosfos, it would seem that the Gemara's final conclusion is that the Chiyuv Bedika is not transferable. But it's very strange, because if the Gemara's conclusion was that the Chiyuv Bedika is not transferable, why introduce Mesiris Maftechus? It really shouldn't, according to Tosfos, it all depends upon the Schiris itself. You know, it may take him a while until he finally comes to collect the Maftechus. You know, let's say, for example, the Schiris agreement was binding at 6 p.m., meaning on the 13th of Nisan, an hour before the end of the day. Well, what happens then? Maybe the socher didn't get around to picking up the maftechas, or maybe the masker couldn't find the keys, I don't know what. L'chora, that whole discussion seems to be secondary, or maybe even irrelevant. Meaning, in the context of Rashi, we understand that the Gemara was vacillating back and forth. Who has the Torah mitzvah? Meaning, they're both equally obligated. The maskir for one reason, the socher for another reason. So the answer is, Mesiras Maftechus. Who has the keys at the Chalos Yudal? But according to Tosfos, the issue is not, well, he should be chayev because he has ownership over the chametz. He should be chayev because he's living with the chametz. No, that wasn't the issue. The issue is, can the maskir transfer the chiyuv bedika over to the socher? And I don't have a clear answer to that question, because according to the logic of Tosfos, it would seem that if the rental agreement would go into effect at 8 p.m., then we have to ask the question, well, can the socher transfer his chiyuv bedika? Because at 7 p.m. there was no binding rental agreement, and therefore the maskir at that point is chayev in bedika. He has the house. The house is, the chametz is accessible to him. He owns the chametz. He should do the bedika. Can he transfer that chiyuv bedika? Well, I don't really know the answer to that question, because at this point the Gemara introduces a whole new variable into the equation. Who's holding on to the maftechas? Is the Gemara completely oblivious to the original question?
This is the re-talking.
Who's talking? This is actually the Toras Chaim who's talking. I'll read to you the Toras Chaim in a second. But to the best of my understanding, the Toras Chaim is asking on the Re, according to you, Re, there is no answer to your question. The Gemara seems to be very satisfied with Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak's response to the question that was posed to him, based on this Braisa. Everything depends upon Mesiris Mavteches. But that skirts the question. The real question is, can the Maskir transfer his Chiv Bedika? I don't know. I'm not sure what the answer to that question is. One side would say no, he became chayv, he can't transfer it. The other side says yes. I mean, it all depends on Mesiris Mavteches. So I'll read to you the language of the Toras Chaim here, as it's quoted in the back of the Masifta. And he says the following. Koshe, it's difficult, misugyezu al pirush ha-tosfos. Shalomdu, Sherav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Nishal, he was asked about a schirus, shenasta bilel arbasar. In other words, if the schirus itself, meaning the rental agreement, became binding, li'achar shekvar chal chiyuv al maskir, meaning at 8 p.m., because already at 7 p.m. there was no question in anyone's mind that who's chayv in the bedika? The maskir. And now we want to know, can the maskir, by entering into this agreement which becomes binding at 8 p.m., transfer his chiyuv over to the socher? The question is, how do you answer that question? What is this braisa going to tell me? Says the Toras Chaim, Efshar, it's possible, Sheba braisa, Chayav ha-socher, Kishamavteach biyodo. Meaning, even if the socher would, let's say, just one second, I just want to read this one more time. He says, "Efsha shabraisa chayv shabraisa chayv asocher shabatepiot kevin shlo is chayv adayin hamaskir." Do you follow what he's saying? Let's say the maskir gave over the maftechos at 6 p.m. on the 13th of Nisan, and who's holding on to the maftechos now at 7 p.m.? The socher. It seems that the Bryce is holding that in such a case the socher would be chayav. Gee, boy. I'm sorry. Because the Skype business, I keep forgetting to shut off the sound. I apologize. You know, the Skype forces me to keep my phone on, but I have to keep reminding myself to shut off the sound, because once the phone is on, if you don't shut, anyone could call you. Okay.
The Bryce seems very clear. The Bryce seems very clear that what you just said. I'm not sure what are we arguing. Why is anybody arguing?
Here's the case. The agreement is binding on the 14th, but the socher got access to Mavtechus on the 13th.
You just added a bit.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got distracted by the phone call here, but you with me?
Why did you say the agreement is binding on the 14th? Where do we know that from?
No. I'm just suggesting, that's what Toras Chaim is saying, that the Braisa doesn't say anything about when the schirus was binding, so we could offer different scenarios. So let's say the schirus was binding on the 14th. That, the contract says that as of the 14th, you, Michael Isaacs, you are in the driver's seat to the schirus is chal. But let's say an hour before that, I give you over the maftechus. So it would seem that according to the Braisa, you become obligated in the bedika. Now that doesn't make sense according to the Re, because the Re is saying that everything depends upon when the schirus is binding. And in fact, the Gemara wanted to say that if the schirus is binding into the 14th, then the maskir remains chayav because it's a non-transferable chayav. All of a sudden, the Braisa is throwing in a whole new element into the equation. Forget about the schirus, let's talk about the maftechus. So you could imagine a situation, says the Toras Chaim, where as far as schirus is concerned, the maskir should certainly still be chayiv in bedika because the schiris only becomes binding into the 14th. But nevertheless, according to this price, it seems that the socher is chayiv in bedika for a whole other reason, not because he was chayiv at the time of this. There was no schiris at that time, but because he had the maftechas. He says, Minayin, when we learn this price, how do we know Shagam Kasher Maskir Kfar is Chayev Livdok? How do we know if the Maskir already became Chayev to be Bodek? Right? Because let's say the Schiv's agreement was into the 14th. Is how do we know that Yifka Chiyuvo, that he could be Mafkia his Chiyuv, when he hands over the Maftechas? Meaning, according to the read, the whole question here that was posed to Rav Nachman by Yitzchak is: can the maskir get wiggle his way out, or as we call the transfer over the chiyuv to someone else? So, let's say, for example, what would be the answer to the following question: the schiris was postponed until 8 p.m. on the 14th, and now the socher has maftechas. So what's going on over here? Is the maskir able to transfer the chiyuv bdika over to the socher? We don't really know because the price says it depends on who's holding on to the maftechas. It's quite possible that the socher picks up the chiyuv because he got the maftechas.
Nobody's going to hand over keys until you sign a contract.
That's today.
The contract is signed, Greg. The contract is already signed. But the question is when... You know, when do I hand over the maftechas? You know, you might come over to me and say, an hour before the schiris, if you don't mind, I'd like to take... Because again, I want to enter the house the very moment that I can. Give me the maftechas. Just to simplify the Torah Chaim's question. According to Tosfos, Azoy Frek the Torah Chaim, everything hinges in the question on whether or not once at the moment of Chiyuv Bedika... Well, let me say it a different way. Everything, yeah, I think that was good. Once, at the moment of Chiyuv Bedika, the maskir is still legally, in a full sense, the owner of this house, right, because the schiris agreement is going to go into effect in an hour from now, then is it possible that the maskir could transfer his chiyuv bedika, meaning he became chayiv in bedika during that hour, but because he owns the house, the rental agreement is not chal yet, can he now transfer it over through the schirus to the socher? That was the issue according to the read. And the truth is, I don't really have an answer to that question. Why? Because the Bryce is talking about maftechas. That's a whole different question. Did the socher get the maftechas at the time of Yudal? Did he not get it until later on? The last line in the Torah Chaim, he says, "Geminayin shegam kasher maskir kvar his chayav livdok shekvar nichnas leil yudalid is yifka chiyuv v'mimenu k'sham avtech etzel asocher. Can he remove that chiyuv that's chal at the moment of tzeis hakochavim? We call it 7 p.m. because the maftechas are in the hands of the socher." That's very interesting because, again, at that moment at 7 p.m. at Seisa Kochom, clearly the maskir became chayiv in bedika. Can he wiggle his way out and transfer that chayiv bedika? Well, I don't know. You know, we don't really have an answer to that question because it really depends, according to the Bryce, on who's holding the maftechas. It could very well be that the maftechas are in the hands of the socher. Now, I would like to take a stab at this and say the following, that maybe the answer to Tos Chaim is that Schirus is not clinched by what? By the contract, but rather by the keys. Exactly. Maybe what the Gemara is saying, again, obviously the Torah Chaim is not going to be comfortable with this, but I'm just suggesting that there's an equation here between Schirus and Mesiris Maftechas, that it's not enough to sign a contract, but until I give you the keys, it's the keys is like the clincher of the deal.
You could sign a contract a month in advance. Yeah. But you don't get the keys to the...
Oh, so that's the question. So if let's say I didn't get the keys from you during that month, So who owns the house? Again, we're assuming that
depends on the date that it says in the contract that
So that's what the Torah Chaim understood, and therefore we never really have an answer to that original question. But I'm suggesting a little bit of a different knage here, and again, don't fitishkach because it just burrs on. But I'm saying, and who am I to question the Torah Chaim? But maybe what the Gemara is saying is that it doesn't depend upon what it says in the contract. What it says in the contract is the potential for schiris to be chal, but the actualization of that potential will depend upon the getting the keys. So even if we signed the contract a month ago, so the nafkamina would be the following. Let's say you own an apartment, and we got an agreement for a month ago, but I didn't get the mafteich till the end of the month. Can you charge me rental for that month? The Torah Chaim is going to say yes, because the schiris was chal then. Maybe I could sue you for damages, because you didn't give me the mafteches.
Something happens to the apartment during that month.
That's excellent. Who's responsible for damages?
Is Hanu,
so I'm suggesting that maybe the schiris itself is going to be in in the air. It's mitlut toli be'avir
in limbo
until you get to mafteches. Maybe mafteches is part of the kinyan. Uh-huh. He's not willing to say that. The Torah Chaim thinks that the kinyan is determined by what? The contract. And the keys is just a matter of bedikas chametz. Who's obligated in bedikas? In bedikas chametz, we have halacha of mesiris maftechus. I'm suggesting that maybe, again, it's a wild idea, that maybe mesiris maftechus is more than just a halacha in bedikas chametz, it's halacha in schiris.
No, I'm saying it's the first time, just 2 seconds ago, you've mentioned the word kinyan. That's the question. What's the
kinyan? Schiris is a kinyan, but what clinches the kinyan? Is it the contract or the handing over the mafteches? That's what I don't know. The Torah Chaim seems to assume that mesiris mafteches is a technicality. It's just a matter of who could do the bedika and who not. Yeah, Abby, what is Rashi?
I mean, Rashi says mesiris mafteches, who kinyan schiris.
Oh, so maybe Rashi could support what I'm saying, and then the Torah Chaim's question might fall apart. Truth is that it's a little bit more complicated than I'm making it out to be, because even if I equate the Kenyan Schiris with the Mesiris Maftechus, we're still not really out in the clear, because again, as far as the Guf HaSha'ela, the kishkas of the original question that was posed to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok, if let's say the Socher, I'm sorry, if let's say the Maskir was Chayev in Bedika, and the Schiris wasn't binding, so what do we derive from this Brisa? The Brisa is saying, well, the Maskir is Chayev because he has the Maftechus. Okay, that's not bad. But again, you're still skirting the question. Let's say, for example, the Mesiris Maftechus was before you Dalid, so then the Maskir removed himself from the bias and from the Chiyuv B'dikas Chometz. We never really got to the grip the question in its own. Then I want to read to you one more line, and then we'll go on in the Gemara. He says here, not sure who he's quoting at this point, he says, Nifshat me abraisa, the finally pshitus means the finally determination from this determination of our original question from the based on the braisa, achen hachiv nosar ala maskir v'eino yochel aviro lesocher. So this would be a response to the argument to the Torah Chaim that we do have a final answer based on this braisa to the safek, according to the Ri, according to Tosfos. Is bedikas chametz a chiyuv that's transferable or not? And the answer is based on this price, and the answer is it's not transferable. Why? Because once the maftechos are in the hands of the maskir at the moment of chalos arbasar, then even though the maskir gives over the maftechos to the socher subsequently, he cannot wiggle out of his chiyuv, he remains chayev in bedika. So that, I think, would be the answer to the Torah Chaim. Again, the Torah Chaim, which he also thinks that Mesiris Maftechus might be halacha in Bedikas Chametz, and it's not halacha in transferring the Chiyuv. All right, let's see if we can go on. Boy minei mi Rav Nachman Yitzchok. Second question that was posed to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok. Hamaskir bayis lechaveru ba'arbasar. Rashi wants to dramatize this. Rashi says four lines before the end of the page, Shachris. So we're already in the morning of Arbasar. So there was a rental agreement, and that rental agreement, and presumably the Mesiris Mafteches, was clinched in the morning. Now, Rabbosai, who did the Bedikah? Hopefully. The Masker, right? The Masker should have done the Bedikah. Did he do the Bedikah or not? I can't really testify. There's no one here that can testify whether or not the Masker did the Bedikah. So that's the suffix that is now being posed to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. Cheskaso Baduk or Ein Cheskaso Baduk? Let's go through the two tzedakim. Rashi says four lines up from the word Mi Machzikinen Le. Machzikinen Le means do we have the right to assume? The word Chazaka means an assumption based on circumstantial evidence that Lahai Maskir. Devadai Bodko Emesh. Please underline those three words in Rashi. Devadai Bodko Emesh. Emesh means last night. And can we, based on Chazaka, can we assume that with all certainty that the Masker implemented his obligation? Kemitzvos Chachamim, Ilo. Or maybe he didn't do so. Now again, if he didn't do so, he was negligent in living up to his responsibility. Maybe he was tarud, you know, he had to go abroad. Maybe he thought that the socher will do the bedika the next morning. I don't know what justification we can come up with, but whatever it is, it's not really an excuse, so to speak. He really should have done what he had to do. So the Gemara right away says, Lamai nafkemina, why are you getting so excited about this question? What difference make? L'shaile, why don't you just knock on the door of the maskir, ask him, did you do the bedika or did you not do the bedika? Okay, we don't have witnesses, but we can trust him. Again, you and I might say, why should we trust him? Because maybe, you know, he has no negias here. Why he could just lie and say, yeah, you know, you ask a guy if he did it and he lived up to his responsibility, he says, yeah, of course, you know. But we have a principle called Eidech Anem Bisurin. A person is believed. So, for example, if you tell me you are Mafis, Shumas, and Maisus, I can eat the produce. I can rely on your word. You don't need two witnesses. And you yourself could testify in your own Maisa that you did it. Or a Shochet, for example. We ask him if he shechted properly. You know, we've got an animal here that's worth $500, and he says, yeah, I shechted properly. Prove it to me. I can't prove it to you. You have to rely on me. So the halacha relies on him. Now it's interesting, Rashi says, Lamai nafkamina l'shaile, lahai means to the maskir, in bodko, in lav. Did he do the bedika, or did he not do the bedika? And the Gemara's answer is, the lesser lahai l'shule, he's out of town, and we can't ask him, we don't have a phone for him, we don't have WhatsApp, we have no way of getting in touch with him. Is l'truche lahai mai, should we now impose upon the socher achi of bedika? Should we be down l'kaf schut or not be down l'kaf schut? So again, if he was here to tell us that he did the bedika, that would be fine. But if he's not here, then we have to be down l'kaf schut, as you say, and we assume that he did the bedika. But the Gemara is not so thrilled about that. The Gemara wants to say that maybe we should impose upon the socher just to make sure that all our bases are covered. That in an event that the maskir may, for whatever reason, have not lived up to his responsibility, we don't have access to ask him. So let's get out of this possible suffix over here and guarantee that the bedikah is done. So Michael is asking, why not apply the principle here of being dan lekaf schus? So I have two different answers to your question. And we're going to try to research this a little bit further, but just intuitively, there are two different ways of approaching this. Let me ask you a question. Let's go back to real basics. On Erev Pesach, the night of the 14th, the Mishnah establishes I have to do a bedika. What am I looking for? Chametz. Is there chametz there in the house?
Shouldn't there?
Maybe yes, maybe no. You know, maybe my wife cleaned up pretty well. You know, we had help in the house. You know, the woman took care of it. I don't really know that there's chametz there. Now, if I've done bittul already, as we saw in Rashi just before, then on a deraisa level, I've covered my basis. The rabbanan came along and said, no, you have to do a bedika. Oh, this is very strange. I don't know that I have chametz there. And yet the rabbanan is saying, do bedika. What does that prove to you, Rabosa?
It's a very chamor situation.
Correct, that there's something about bedika that defies the laws of Suffolk. Maybe in Hilchas Fakers, I would be able to apply a principle called Suffolk Darabanan Lakula. In other words, you know, the worst case scenario, I violate some sort of Darabanan here, but on a Darais level, I covered myself because of Bidl. And yet, Bidikas Chametz, almost in its very essence, by its very nature, defies the laws of Sfeikas. And basically, what Bidikas Chametz says is, I don't want to hear stories from you. Don't tell me about your wife cleaning the house. Don't tell me about this one. Don't tell me about that one. You can give me stories from here till your hoopits. And, you know, I very rarely brought in chametz, and I was very careful. You know, I'm a yeki. You know, every time I see a crumb, I push it away and I throw it into the rug. You know, don't give me any of that stuff. I want to know with absolute certainty that there's no chametz in the house. Why did the rabbanan do so? Because of the chumra of chametz. But what they did is more important to me. I'm less interested in the motivation and why the chacham decided to make that mitzvah b'dika than the definition of the mitzvah b'dika. The definition of the mitzvah b'dika is forget about suffering. Don't give me any svaris. You know, here we don't want to hear svaris. You know, it's very nice if you want to say svaris, but here I need certainty. Is Memela, even though in general you might say, you know, let's down like Adam Lekavschus, that he probably did the Bedika, he was obligated in the Bedika, the Maskir must have lived up to his obligation. I don't want to hear that. There still is a suffix that gnaws at me, you know, the back of my mind, that maybe he didn't do the Bedika. So according to our first approach, the Gemara is telling me that Bedika is more chum, and it defies the normal laws that would apply to a mitzvah derabbanan. And the definition of bedika, or the goal of bedika, is to get to a case of vadai. And whenever I need certainty, then I'm not going to rely on chazakas, I'm not going to rely on circumstantial evidence, I'm not going to rely on the assumption that he's a good guy, and he probably lived... No, I don't want any assumptions. I want a vadai. And the vadai can only be achieved through bedika. And the laws of bedika are very strict. You can have to go through every nook, every cranny, and every chorin ustakim, and look and see. And the Gemara is going to have a possibility that this chametz on a rafter, and you have to go climb up and get it down. The Gemara is going to have a possibility that the shamash goes into the otzar ayayin, you know, to bring wine to the table. Maybe he had a piece of bread in his. Every possibility is going to be. You saw a weasel carrying chametz into the house. You got to do bedika. Either weasel eats the chametz. Not, maybe the weasel wasn't hungry and he dropped the chametz somewhere. That's the way it is. You have to have absolute certainty.
Can't you argue the hefech that if that is the case, then for sure the Baal HaBayis, the maskir did the bedika, because he knows he has to do it.
Again, that doesn't give me a vada. You know, he knows he has to do it, but did he live up to his responsibility or not? You know, he came up with 50 million justifications. He says, I'm going out of town, the socher is living in the house, I'm not living in the house, maybe he's an amoritz, he doesn't realize that since the maftechus, you know, he can give all sorts of excuses. And even though the chazaka tells me that he probably did do the bedika, that doesn't give me certainty. Or there's another way of approaching this. And the way of approaching this that I want to offer now is much more universal. It's not that bedika is the exception to the rule because you have to get to vada, you have to get to certainty. But rather within the context of the laws that govern Iser v'Heter. What do I mean? The Gemara says in Beitzah, the beginning of the Masechta, that if Muktzah falls into a mixture, then the whole thing becomes osur. The language of the Gemara is not important for us. I'm just going to mention it for the scholars in the group, and you close your ears if you don't want to hear this because I don't have time to go into it. We're talking about something called Eitzim Shenashru Min HaIlan, is Can you be marbe all over mevatla? The Gemara says afilu be'elef lo bato. So again, you have a piece of mukta that got mixed up in 1,000 pieces. That's not, the Gemara says everything's awesome. Mukta is only derabban. So why not apply the principle of suffik derabban? Every time I put my hand into this mixture, I pull out a piece of wood. I can assume based on the laws that govern rove that this was the one that was cut before yontif for the sake of my fireplace. So Gemara says, nay, here we're not going to apply the laws of Bittul. Why? Because it's a davar sheyeshlo matir. Because this mukta will become mutter. It's not like something that's awesome and it's always awesome for all of posterity. With motzi yontif, meaning with ben hashmashos, you know, going out of yontif, it becomes mutter. So why get into Bittul and have to apply the laws of Hachros Sfeikus that every time you pull out of, oh, I can assume it came from the majority. Leave that out. What's urgent here? Wait until after Yontif. That's called a Dover Sheyesh Lo Matir. So the poskim take this very far. And they say that the concept of a Dover Sheyesh Lo Matir applies whenever you could do something to skirt the suffix, to circumvent the suffix without any great loss. In the case of Bedikas Chametz, we don't know if the maskir actually implemented the chiyuv. So you might apply the laws of Sfeikus and say, well, let's assume Chazaka, he's probably a good guy, he belongs to the Rov, Rov Jews do what they have to do. No. Even if it's a Darabonin, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say, go ahead and do the Bedika. Why? Because you have it within your hands to circumvent the whole suffix, to skirt the whole issue. Just simply go ahead and do the Bedika. The Gemara is not sure, and it vacillates back and forth, whether or not that's considered a hefseh. Do we view Bedikas Chametz as such a tremendous undertaking and a hassle that therefore we want to say it's not like, you know, mukta, just wait till the clock ticks and make Avdolah after Yontif and everything's mutter. Here, you know, you're undertaking a tremendous hassle. You know, you got to get yourself a nair, and you have to be bodeg, pachorin, stocking, go through everything. That's a tircha gedola. What do we say? No. You have it biyodcha, it's within your hands to solve the problem. We're not going to enter into the laws of sfeikus. For example, the Gemara says, l'shaile. Let's ask him. Do I have to ask him? The Shulchan Aruch in Hilchas Shechita, Siman Aleph in Yoredeya, says the following, that Rov Mitzuyin Etzel Shechita Mumchin Heim, a person comes along and he shefts an animal, we can assume that he's a Baki. And the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, says we don't even have to ask him. We don't have to ask him. If he shefted an animal, we assume he's a Baki. We don't have to test him or where are your documents? What do you call it?
To
that shuv. You know, your shuv to that you're shaking a butik. No. We don't even have to ask him. But here, the Gemara says, L'shaile. So you're going to have to say that in the case of Shechita, we are so absolutely convinced that a person who shechts an animal, he's not stam a guy off the street, you know, and he took a chalif, that it's not even a suffix.
Because that's the reason. Because to do Shechita, anybody can do bedika, but to do shechita, you have to have gone through something. So maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, theoretically, you can imposter a shochet, but the assumption is a person doesn't do that, and the Gaon says that we don't even have to ask him. That's how convinced we are. In this case, we do have to ask him because here we're not absolutely sure. Maybe he did bedika, maybe he didn't do bedika, maybe he didn't do bedika because he came up with 15 different excuses why not to do the bedika. So the Gemara says the following: if he's in front of us, you have to ask him. If he tells you he did bedika, you believe him. If he's not in front of you, what's the deal? Is this a tremendous tircha gedola by asking the socher to do the bedika and maybe a repeat bedika, totally unnecessary, but maybe the maskir didn't do the bedika, so why not cover your bases and do what you have to do? Or in the first chat that we said, bedika requires a certainty, and until you absolutely know for sure that he did the bedika, you know, there's something called a Shvu'a Doraisa. A Shvu'a Doraisa is very chamur. I mean, the Gemara says that the world shook 400 Amos and 400 Amos when the Torah says Lotisa is one of the Aser Sadim. So the question is the Socher able to take a Shvu'a Doraisa that the Masker did the Bedika? Absolutely not. Again, you know, it's very nice to assume that the Maskir fulfilled his obligation, but we would not allow the Socher to take a Shvu'a Doraisa that for sure he did it. You don't know that he did it. There's always a possibility, for whatever reason, that he didn't do it. So therefore, in Bedikas Chametz, where we need Vadai, you know, you can't tell me, Mr. Socher, that you're Vadai, that the Bedika was done. Amaluhu Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak. So in response to this question, and by the way, Rav Osa, if anybody has to go, you know, please go. It's just that I started late today because of the bris, so I'm going to go another 5-10 minutes, and I asked for mechila on that. But I felt, you know, Yechiel Prince, he became a Zayda just 8 days ago. And, you know, he's one of, you know, he adds tremendously to this Limud HaTorah here in the Amic Learning Center. That I just felt, on the one hand, I didn't want to cancel the Shia, but on the other hand, I felt I should at least go in to say Mazel Tov. So I apologize, but that's just the timing was impossible. In fact, when I came in, they hadn't even started the bris yet. 5 minutes later, they started the bris.
No.
Yeah. No, it wasn't. The truth is, no, don't misunderstand, Don. It wasn't that the mole was late. You know, then you'd say, what's new? You know, but no, the mole was on time. That's what's new. But they set it up that it would the bris would begin after davening. So they had, you know, the regular Shabbos plus Hallel and plus Kriyas HaTorah. So they didn't really tell you exactly. There's no time on the invitation. It just says after Shachris, you know. So I figured that, you know, how long they called Shachris at 7:30. How long would it take till they finished? But okay, Amalu Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Nisuha. Once again, as he did in the previous suffix about Maskir and Socher, he quotes a Braisa. What does it say in the Braisa? Hakol Ne'amonim al Bir Chametz. Everyone can be believed to testify. Nemana means to testify. We could rely on their testimony. Everyone's believed in their testimony regarding Bir Chametz, meaning to testify that the Bedika was done properly. Now the word Bir Chametz in this context, which literally means to destroy the Chametz, is a broader term that's used also to refer to Bedika, as you'll see in Rashi, two lines up before the end of the Amud. Now, when you say Hakol Ne'amonim, everyone's believed. Well, we have a principle called Eid Echad Nem Bisurin. The Torah trusts the testimony of one person. So why did you discover, you know, you discovered America over here that everyone's believed? Oh, so the Braisa says Afilu Noshim, Afilu Avodim, Afilu Ketanim. Now, I can go backwards here and explain the easy ones first, and that's Ketanim. A katan doesn't have nemanus. When you say eidecha nem bisurin, we don't trust the katan. He could be brilliant, he could be the Vilna Gaon, but the halach is he's still a katan. He has no nemanus. Eved is a little bit more complicated, and the question is whether an eved has the status of a Jew. He has mitzvos, but not all the mitzvos. In fact, the Ramban is of the opinion that he needs another gerus in order to, when he gets freed. So he's in a quasi-state somewhere between being Jews and non-Jews. And therefore, I don't know if I can trust him. We don't trust Goyim when it comes to an Iser. You know, a Goy could testify on the taste of something. You know, you trust the chef, you know, to tell you whether or not, because, you know, if he lies to you, maybe you'll fire him. You know, he'll lose his job. But he doesn't have real Nemanus. Nemanus is given to Jews and not to non-Jews. But then we go up the ladder to Nushim. That's problematic. Right? When a man comes home and he wants to have a relationship with his wife and she was a Nida, well, who's going to tell him that she went to Mikvah after she counted Zayin Nikiyim? It's only her. The Torah says V'safra La, that she counts and we believe her. So what's the Chiddush over here? Throw in Nushim here. What was the Hava Mina? That Nushim would not be believed in Bedikas Chametz. They're believed in Nida, which is an Issur Kares. For sure they should be believed in something called the Bedikas Chametz, which is only a Derabanan at the best. So on this we have a Tosfos, Divra Maskel Hemnuhu on Daf Dalet Amid Beis. And Tosfos quotes a Yushalmi. And Yushalmi says that women will not do a proper bedika, and therefore we can't trust them on bedika. Why does Yushalmi think that a woman will not do a good bedika? So the Yushalmi doesn't really explain it. The Yushalmi says that women will be laid back about it. You know, is that a pejorative description of women? Right? So my Rebbe used to say the following, that the reason why women might be laid back about bedikah is because anybody would be laid back about bedikah. The reason why we are careful about the bedikah is because of the chiyuv, the obligation. The obligation of bedikas chametz was placed on the man and not on the woman. If the man defaults, or in a case where there is no man, then she becomes the shoo-in, the fill-in for the man. And when you're really just replacing someone who's obligated, but you're not really the original person who's obligated, and it's a tircha gedola, like we said, you know, bedikah is a real hassle, you might be a little bit laid back about it. In fact, I would add my own sociological svara here, that maybe a woman thinks, I clean the house. You know, how often do you... I don't know if you've ever had this experience. You're in the middle of the bedikah and you're taking apart the couch. And your Rebbetzin realizes that to put the couch back together is a major hassle. So she says, I already checked under there. You know, and she yells at you, what do you have to do with bedikah? They rely on me. But the halach is that you have to be bodeh. And if there's chametz possibly under the the pillows of the couch, you have to look for that. But we have a tendency of being a little bit lazy about it. And how much more so if I shirk my responsibility? In any event, just the bottom line of this discussion is that the Brice establishes that everyone's believed in bedikas chametz, even people whose status as far as nemanis is questionable. Nevertheless, we believe them. So at this point, the Gemara asks, and now we're going to be turning to Daf Dalet Amid Beis, my time of Mehemni. Why do we believe these people, who as a general rule, are not to be relied upon? And we turn to Daf Dalet Amid Beis, Lav. Lav means, I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question, is it not for the following reason? Mishum dechezkaso baduk. I mean, they're testifying that the person, the Baal Bayis, who is obligated to Bedika, fulfilled his obligation. Later on we'll discuss a case where she did the bedikah, so she claims. But now we're talking about a case where she's testifying that her husband did the bedikah. And we rely on her testimony, or the testimony for that matter of an eved or a katan. And the answer is that even though, according to strict laws of nemanis, these people would not have nemanis, but in bedikas chametz they are believed. And why is that? Because of cheskaso baduk. Cheskaso baduk means that the assumption is that a person lives up to his obligation, and that's called a chazaka. And if we apply that logic to the case of a maskir and socher, then even though the schiris took place in the morning, which means the socher doesn't want, you know, he's not interested in picking up the chiyuv bdika, but yet he's not certain that the maskir lived up to his responsibility. But the answer is, we have a principle called cheskaso baduk, that a person will, in fact, implement his chiyuv, live up to his obligation, and therefore the socher could rely on the fact that the maskir did the bedikah.
That's the same as a shochet, no? Same concept?
Again, in the case of a shochet, he has nemanus, but a katan doesn't have nemanus. So, for example, if a katan would testify that this animal was shechted, we wouldn't rely on a katan. Correct? But if the katan now you're asking a different question. What if the katan tells you that the gadol did the shechita? So if that gadol was obligated, you see, in shechita, no particular individual is obligated. In bedikas chametz, is one particular individual is obligated. The katan is believed to tell us that that person lived up to his responsibility. All right, Blee Netter, we'll pick this up tomorrow. Okay, then? Again, I apologize for my lateness today.